You're listening to TheStreet.com's Real Story with Frank Curzio. Visit anytime for this and our other multimedia products.
I'm Frank Curzio, and this is The Real Story, where I go beyond the headlines and let you know what's really moving this market. Today's Friday, and do not get in the way of these markets. Stocks moved up again today. Well, they did pull back a little bit towards the end of the day, but that pushes the rally to six straight weeks. Dow only finished up about 5 points. NASDAQ gained 2 points with Russell. Another big day up 1.2%. I know what you're thinking. We're all geniuses now, right? Markets are up. We're all up 100%. We're going to quit our jobs, become day traders. Not so fast. A lot of risks that are still in this marketplace, seeing solid earnings, mostly due to artificial measures taken by the government. So can this rally continue? My first guest says, I don't think so. That is Andrew Horowitz from The Disciplined Investor. Great interview. He's going to analyze the economic, technical, and fundamentals of this market. Also, he's going to go over short selling. Is this a dead market? Remember, uptick rule, government bailouts, really tough to short these days. And finally, he's going to give you his favorite picks. My next guest is Stephanie Link, Director of Research for the Action Alerts Plus Portfolio. She's going to break down the GE quarter. More important, she owns it for Action Alerts Plus, and she's going to tell you the reason why she's buying after the quarter. Also, she's going to talk about the Citigroup quarter, which is pretty positive. Stock was down today, and a lot of financials on deck. I mean, it's a given. Is every single one of them going to blow out the estimates? That's what we're seeing so far. And is it factored in given the huge run-up in these stocks? Great interview again from Stephanie. Looking at sectors, strong home builders. The XHB, that's the home builder ETF, is over 13 now. I think it's going to 14, which probably means it's going to go to 16. And I think you're going to be in for a rude awakening. But anyway, enjoy that rally in that. And that ETF, financials also strong, and retailers. Turning to some of the things that are weak, gold, biotech, utilities, also alternative energy, finally pulling back. Against some individual stocks, winners, Intuitive Surgical up 12% on positive comments in their conference call. Now remember, yesterday morning they reported the conference call was after the close, so today with the positive comments, you saw the stock go up. BB&T up 11% on solid earnings. Dryships up 30%. After raising cash through an offering. Amazing what pushes stocks up these days. Losers, GameStop down 3% on a report that suggests a slowdown in video game sales. I'm going to say that again. A slowdown in video game sales. It may be the first time in history I've ever seen that. SciTech Industries down 15% on weak earnings. Other notables, Google, GE, they were only up 1% each. Again, strong earnings. And Citigroup was down 9%. Was up early on. Finished down on the day. Again, that company did report earnings. Finally, the Action Alerts Plus newsletter. Yes, it's now on sale. One more week left. I'm going to give you the price through the podcast. How's it going out there? Welcome to Friday. Finally, what a week. really tired when it comes to Friday. All the newsletter stuff is done, getting everything in, the deadlines, the prices. And, you know, then you get the podcast ready and everyone's emailing you about different things. So, yeah, Friday's really crazy. And next week, forget it. Wait till you hear the companies are reporting next week. Everybody's reporting next week. Not everybody, but I got to build it up a little bit. A lot of companies are reporting. A lot of major companies, S&P 500 companies. Over the next 3 weeks, it's going to be absolutely nuts. Also, we have economic data. So it should be fun. I want to start off the program by saying happy 20th anniversary to CNBC. For me, it brought back memories. My late dad used to take me in the studio. Used to be on a lot early on and through pretty much most of before he passed away. And, you know, he used to take me to studios. I met Marie Bartiromo when I was a kid. She was actually a kid at the time, too. And, you know, all the crew, Ron and Sonia, Sue Huera. So, and it was cool. And afterwards, he used to take me out in the street. And he's like, Frank, I got the best restaurant for you. The best restaurant you're going to find in the city, I promise you. So we went on a corner. And I was like, you know, Dad, where are we going? And, he handed me a hot dog from the hot dog stand. So he said, right, he's the best place, the best food you're ever going to get. And you know what? He was right. The hot dogs are so good back then. But, yeah, he was always a simple guy, that and Chinese food. And, yeah, it brought back a lot of memories. He was on a lot, and it was pretty cool to actually go to the studios, and, you know, they moved to New Jersey and stuff. And but good for them. So a lot of familiar faces. They had the closing bell with everybody there. It was amazing. They brought back, like, some of the old anchors and everything, and people that I met when I was a little kid, so who have no clue who I am now. But, yeah, it did bring back memories, and good for them. And, you know, sometimes I pick on them a little bit and I say, you know, not really pick on CNBC as much as I pick on some of the guests that go on there. But, yeah, it was pretty cool to see, and happy 20th anniversary to them. Now, what a market. Rally continues, six straight weeks. Wonder what the record is. How many consecutive weeks we can go up? But, I don't know, looks like, you know, we're never ever going to pull back. And remember when we were going down so much and we were flying down and people were like, you know, just scared. And right before, you know, when we hit the March lows through February, it was absolutely horrible. And I want to say it was something like 17 or 19 days we were down, something like that. And now it's amazing how it switches. It's kind of the reverse. Now, markets aren't going to go up forever, guys. You know, I'm predicting a pretty big pullback here, which seems like we're getting well ahead of ourselves. And I think the question is, though, is kind of the dip's going to get bought here, because that's going to signal more bullishness in the market. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see. And again, economic data relatively weak, you know, a few bright spots to be fair, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the next couple of weeks play out, especially in the heart of earnings season. But, man, this rally is impressive. And to talk more about it is Andrew Horowitz from The Disciplined Investor. Start by asking him, what do you think about today's action?
What do I think? It's a beautiful thing where we see everything go up. You know, Frank, you ever go fishing, Frank?
Yes, I have.
All right, so down here in Florida, you go fishing, you put a little bait on the hook, and you drop in the water. Now, sometimes you get just an amazing amount of fish that come around, right? And what you do is you sometimes drop a blank hook in the water, an empty hook, and the fish bite anyway. Kind of like what's going on now, right?
It seems like everything's going up in this market. But, hey, you know what? A lot of people that I say, especially on the technical side, they're expecting finally to see a pullback. I'm also expecting it as well. What do you think? I mean, it was saying, what is this? We're going on the six-week rally over here. What do you see with these markets? I mean, I know that you're seeing. I'm seeing stocks that have no business. Liquidity problems up 100, more than 100%. What do you think?
I think that the stock market has been overextended for a few weeks now, and we're seeing an interesting rotation. First of all, some of the basic functioning of the markets have to be questioned. For example, we're seeing this kind of overnight futures on the U.S. markets, that is. The overnight futures are selling off, and then miraculously they make it back right on the open. And then we get that 2 o'clock bump. We get the 3 o'clock ridiculous move on the market, which has been blamed by many people on, you know, just clearly the various program trading. But, I mean, when you see a down day of 1% and all of a sudden at 3 o'clock it comes and you end up 1% up, you have to wonder what is going on. And we're seeing a lot of that go on, and it's very, very broad-based. It's not individual stocks. So when you look at that kind of scenario, I have to wonder really what's going on here. And some of it, I think, has to get back. I'm not going to use the word manipulation, but I'm going to say, although I just did, I guess, you know, it gets back to what's going on with the government and what are they trying to do and how much is their hand involved.
Well, I'll say this. If you're not going to say it, I will say it. It is manipulation of what the government is doing, and something I've been talking about in the podcast for a while. And there's two ways. I mean, you could really sit there and you could really complain about it, or you could say, okay, you know there's going to be inflation in the future, because right now the Fed, well, not even the Fed, but the government as well, they haven't been punished for spending as much as they can. So the fact that they're not punished, but you haven't seen the risks of them spending so much, the fact that you haven't seen it yet means they're going to spend a lot more. We're going to see more auto part makers come to the table. We're going to see probably more bailouts when it comes to so many different industries, including the insurers. And now, you know, as you mentioned, and you have a very interesting report I wanted to bring to, before I get my point, it's a quarterly report, we'll get to that in a second, but even like the commercial real estate, we're going to see even more bailouts. But the fact that you're not seeing the risk on the side that about how much money you spend, it seems like they're going to continue to spend money, manipulate it to the point where it's very difficult for guys like us where, you know, you do the homework, you do the research, say, okay, this stock is worthless, and the government says, here you go, here's $5 billion. It's very difficult for us. So, yeah. I have no other way than describe the manipulation.
Any analysis in this market?
You know what I do? Seriously, and I've been criticized for it. When
darts?
It comes with the financial. Yeah, darts always works. But really, I haven't really been participating in financials. There's one financial that I really like, Hudson City Bank Corp, that I got stopped out at. And people are like, well, Frank, you're not participating in the financial rally. But I am participating in the rally, and I am doing actually a little bit better than the markets, a lot better than the markets and my benchmark. It's because I'm sticking to companies that are not focused on bailouts, companies that I think are oversold that are doing it right. But I just can't find myself taking a guess on Citigroup when you're seeing, and we discuss this all fair, like the quants going back and forth, trying to time, you know, the preferreds coming to the market and you know, the manipulation going on the stock was up 14% today. I think now it's down a little bit. It's very difficult. So I guess you really have to stick to things you know. Or you could just take 5 or 10% of your money and buy a Citigroup. I don't know. I just can't say that
here. Well,
here's
the problem, you know, that I'm hearing from the professionals all over the place that they're not willing to get in front of this, right? There's some that we're going to play a little bit. We play a market neutral kind of game, right? So that's what we do. And the problem is you go market neutral, so you go long. So we're long some of the, for example, we really liked and for a while there, and we'll kind of see if they're overbought too right now. But the companies like, you know, Brazil and India and China, great. You know, we like some of the ag names and some of the baseline, you know, early kind of cyclicals. But at the same time, some of these names, you know, like a Capital One that is seeing dramatic, just a dramatic delinquencies that are on the rise, like you can't believe, that do not have the same too big to fail concept with them. You know, they're moving up dramatically. It doesn't matter their delinquency report that we see approaching 9%. On the 30-day right now, their numbers are off the charts in terms of what we see in the next, let's say, I don't know, you know, let's say in the next 12 months if you have a continuation of the unemployment. But meanwhile, nobody cares. Investors don't seem to care anymore. They've taken risks from 6 weeks ago from reckless to where we are now, it seems. And when I say investors, I don't mean everybody. I mean, you know, just whoever, in fact, is putting money into these to riskless. I don't think anybody cares about the commercial real estate problem, because when you have TALF coming out just yesterday and them saying that they're going to look into the commercial real estate area and possibly utilize a five-year payment plan at very, very low interest rates versus the current, you know, plan, and pretty much give free money away, and industry after industry, the insurance industry has been saved. The you know, the banks we know about, of course. Now we see the amount of money. Now we're talking about another $13 billion being used for railroads, and we're seeing just a continuation of money just flying everywhere. It's very difficult for a portfolio manager who looks at both sides of the equation, the companies that are not doing well, the companies that are doing well and should do well, and try to pick things. And I'll share one more thing with you. Last week we saw Mosaic come out with earnings. Did you see those earnings? They were awful.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
They were awful.
They pulled the whole sector down,
40 to about 44, 10% up on awful earnings.
Yeah.
Now, what is that telling you?
It tells you you should make sure that they report worse earnings. It's good for your stocks.
it's just ridiculous. Right now, I just pulled up a report on, we're early into this and we're in a front-loaded, right? We talked about that, you and I, off the air, that we're in a front-loaded situation here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that financials are in the front of all this. And, of course, we know that the financials are amazing. I mean, record earnings. How does that make you feel, by the way?
It makes me feel good, considering that Goldman Sachs got $10 billion and they're reporting record earnings.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Didn't they also move their December month into the quarterly earnings?
No, they just did away with it. They took it out.
They took it and put it in the garbage and said, no. They moved it in, but they didn't have it.
Yeah. So it is amazing. But you know what? It's important to realize that these banks are reporting these earnings due to temporary artificial measures. So if you really jump all over that, and we're seeing a lot of the top names, and one of the guys I mentioned, Doug Cass, I get, you know, positive, negative reviews, one of the guys that were able to call the bottom. But even he's shorting financials right now. So we've seen a lot of names that were bullish on financials saying, okay, enough's enough. And a lot of names. I mean, Chano said he's out of financials now. Bought them at the bottom. He said, you know, I'm done.
Well, that's not the way it looks right now to me in terms of the tickers.
Well,
you
not
know,
the tickers.
Financials still moving up.
But did you see the latest report from State Street saying how the mutual funds are starting to really pour, the institutions pouring money into the markets at these levels? And if you think about it, I mean, those of you who have 401k statements, I have a balanced fund with Fidelity that's absolutely horrible, that cannot be the benchmark for anything. I wish I could put it into my own newsletter, which I haven't been the benchmark ever since I took it over. And it's very frustrating for me, but they can't afford not to beat their benchmarks too much longer. They're going to lose a ton of business to the largest hedge funds, the billions and billions of dollars of hedge, the huge ones. They're going to lose money to them, and they can't afford to miss this rally. And it feels like that's what you're seeing right now. When you're seeing money go into oil services companies, when every oil company is cutting CapEx, where you're seeing inventory levels at 20-year highs, and these stocks are bouncing 50, 75%, not 100%, they double. And I understand it's from oversold levels. I get that. However, the thesis now, some of these guys coming out saying, well, you know, with the cutbacks, it's going to, you know, supply is going to drop like a rock and it's going to meet demand. And you're going to see oil come all the way up. Guys, that is like 3 years away from now. That should not be a thesis. If you're going to say that, you know, they're rising from oversold levels, that's different. But there's just no fundamental reason I see for some of these stocks to really be trading at the levels they're trading at.
Well, that goes for a lot of stocks. I mean, again, you look at some of the numbers. First of all, analysts once again had brought down numbers so low that almost companies would have to be in unbelievably bad shapes not to miss their estimates. I mean, not to beat their estimates. Okay, we're seeing a very small amount of numbers come out, but so far, you know, in the industrials, we're seeing 15% of the industrials have reported. You know, we're seeing total universe of the S&P 500. You know, we're seeing a very mixed review in terms of earnings.
Yes.
A very mixed review.
Absolutely. I agree with that, yeah.
You know, and as a matter of fact, I think that when I did the last review of this, we saw that, you know, somewhere there was about a, probably about a 70% of estimates for EPS was better, but yet at the same time, earnings 70% or approximately 70% was much worse. In other words, income was much worse. That tells me there's some financial engineering going on.
Yeah,
Look at Google's numbers just last night.
Well, last night when they reported, the stock was up to 408, and I was telling everybody, I said it was a decent quarter, and you know, CNBC was just hyping it up like it was great, it was unbelievable. I said it's not unbelievable. They their revenues were lower than estimates. However, I will tell you this, Andrew, is when companies are cutting back and you see the economic storm we have, the first cuts are the biggest. So it's easy. When you have six flat-screen TVs, you're like, wow, we don't need six. Let's cut it to three. Just an example. But you're going to see the deepest cuts, and that's where you're seeing a lot of these companies really kick the crap out of, on the earnings side. You're not going to really see that going forward. It gets harder and it's more difficult to cut costs as demand wanes. And I think that's not factored into stocks right now, where everyone's like, wow, earnings are fine. Earnings are fine because everyone's really saying, wow, we need to cut back. You saw how many people laid off. Look what the numbers are. I mean, you know,
Doesn't seem to matter either. The economic numbers, we follow economic numbers in that report, the second quarter economic review and commentary that we put out, which everybody can get if they want. By the way, come to disciplinedinvestor.com and contact us. We'll send you a copy of that. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that we put together on a quarterly basis for our clients. But basically, if you look at that and you look at the numbers from an economic standpoint, here's the point, Frank. Yeah, things fell off a cliff dramatically. And if you look at the charts, they're pretty spooky. But, you know, you look at retail sales as a prime example, that this whole idea of green shoots and mustard seeds, I mean, it's enough of this. There's a lot of weeds out there, too. And you know, if we get caught up in this, hopeful, you know, thought of, you know, a September recovery back to growth, I mean, that's one quarter away, essentially, that we're going to return to growth, which means that, yes, in the first page of that shows how the length of the average recession, we are clearly, you know, approaching the longest recession since the Great Depression, of course. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that necessarily it has to end so quickly. And even if the recession does end quickly, we still have a bigger issue. We have a consumer. We have 6 million people that are unemployed right now. Clearly a lagging indicator. But at the same time, when you look at some of these numbers, like retail sales, have you looked at the retail stocks lately? It's like nothing ever happened.
I was just going to bring that up, too. And also, the restaurant chains, restaurant stocks as well, food stocks that have gone
up. It's a party, man.
Tremendously. And again, maybe some of them are from oversold levels, and they're cutting back dramatically, so they're easily beating earnings estimates now. But I don't know if they're accounting for demand. Something I've been saying the last 2 days, that retail sales number scared the hell out of me because that was supposed to be very positive, and it turned out to be a negative number, missed by a wide margin, and that's with the Obama check still coming in and people already getting their taxes done. So you're seeing money flow into this market. That retail sales number, if you notice, last one was revised even higher. How many times have we seen an economic number revised higher, the always revised number? Retail sales were revised higher last quarter. So, you know, you kind of expected this one was going to be very strong. It wasn't. And what's that to say going forward for retail sales? People are cutting back, and you know, I hear it from everyone, and I hear it from myself. And you also say that unemployment is a lagging indicator, and I hear that all the time. But you know what? And it's something else I brought up on the podcast is when you see your friends, I'm sure you have them too, Andrew, where they get laid off, and they have 20 years of experience, and you know that they're good at their job, it makes you think differently. It makes you cut back yourself and say, wow, you know what? My best friend just got laid off.
I had a conversation with somebody who lives in New Jersey, and they actually making more money because they have a job that just general you know, their income increases over time. But a lot of their friends have been laid off, a lot of problems. And they said to me, they're not going out, they're not spending. And I asked why. I said, what do you mean? Well, you know what? We see what's going on out mm-hmm. there, and just we are just kind of hunkering down as well.
Yeah.
And even though they're doing better. But if you look at the retail sales numbers, you know, what was interesting that happened there was this. We saw the retail sales number come out. It was definitely a disappointment. Clearly, markets weren't happy. But, you know, the media spun it to be that, oh, that's probably just one period of an irregularity on the way up. But meanwhile, when you see a better-than-expected number or a number that isn't as bad, we saw the Philly Fed survey, and somehow the headlines came out and said it was a good thing. The base book was the same issue. And they're spinning it. Be very, very careful, because right now the economics are not falling as rapidly as they were. But when you look at them on their own, they're still very, very bad. And the fact of the matter is that the economics as we see it right now, maybe they're not, you know, have the same velocity down, but they're still not leveling off for the most part. And even if they did level off right now, when you look at all the different economic indicators, it's still not showing a really pretty picture moving forward. And that's what, you know, when Bernanke talks about we're seeing, you know, little signs, and that's BS. Excuse my French there. But it's not. It's not happening. We don't see it at all. You know, if you look at, there are tons of indicators I can share with you, but if you look at, for example, we're seeing a commercial paper market right now that's inverted in terms of yield. That's spooky. That means that we're seeing a lot of people changing their kind of concept. They're moving out. Do you see the trim tabs number this week?
Yes, this week, yep.
On equity mm-hmm. inflows and outflows?
Yep.
Huge number out of equities
out of equities, which contradicts State Street's report. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you something, Frank. Here's a little prediction. I can be proven wrong on this, and I have been proven wrong recently because the market just seems to, you know, keep going straight up to the sky, okay? The longer we keep seeing this divergence from reality, where we're seeing earnings come out and then being questionable, and the outlook being questionable, and at the same time, the stocks going up in general, the harder it's going to fall on the back end.
Well, once again, we're talking to Andrew Horowitz. He's from The Disciplined Investor, also Horowitz & Company. As he said earlier, got a great report that I just read before I came in here. It's a quarterly report. You can go to Disciplined Investor to get that economic outlook. Let's talk a little bit about, and I know how much you like to short some of the stocks, and you see, you know, what's overvalued, undervalued, but what is your opinion about how the market is right now? It's almost to the point where the government's almost making it impossible for you to short. And also, if you're a short, you have to be worried because the if anything comes down to a certain level, it feels like the government's going to be this, you guys are too big to fail. and they're going
to
be in there and rescue it. Because you can do your research and say, okay, based on this, the debt, this company's going to run out of money. They're either going to have to raise money. When they do, it might take a little bit longer, whatever. We know the whole scenario. And chances are the stock's really going to crash and has liquidity problems. However, when they're able to just, like, throw money into, you know, the auto parts industry, the insurers, commercial real estate, how difficult of an environment it is for a guy like you who sells short?
Well, it's very difficult because what happens is, you know, we have a short string or short leash on many of these positions. And, for example, let me give you an example. So we're short MasterCard, okay, as an example. Well, MasterCard had a string of what I would say would be negative numbers and industry results that were negative. Meanwhile, the stock goes from approximately this one particular time, about 160 up to about 178 or so. So we're in this thing about, you know, 165, let's say, on the short side. And we're scratching our heads saying, what is going on here, right? It was as low as 156 for a moment there. It went up. And it was almost every report after report after report, especially unemployment reports, were saying that things were going the wrong direction for the stock. But all of a sudden, there's still this lift underneath it. You know, that's one example. I mean, it's finally back well under our short price, but you know, you look at Apple for example. You know, I got a lot of kind of pokes on this one. You know, we went long Research in Motion and short Apple. Thought that Apple was very overvalued and Research in Motion was undervalued. So we picked up Research in Motion at 44. Actually sold it at about 62 after the earnings came out. And Apple, on the other hand, just kept going up and up and up, even though we see reports there's a 16% reduction in sales of laptops through Apple for the most recent period, and there's a question about whether people are going to continue to buy the luxury items as Apple is. But more so, you look at like commercial real estate, and you see the continuation of delinquency levels coming up, and you know the whole Eastern Seaboard, as I mentioned before, And then you look at the companies and you see many of them are overvalued. And I got a list of about 25 of them that we posted on an MSN list yesterday over at and on our site as well. And I have to stop for a second and wonder, do I want to actually short these companies? Because I do wonder whether or not the government's going to come right behind that. And then the short squeeze will be enormous. I am not interested in a squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we don't really want to get killed. I mean, look at some of them, you know, last couple of days have been up dramatically. And it's questionable why that is even happening.
Well, I look at it, too, to Surgical, for example, and they came out with earnings estimates kind of in line, but the report was terrible. The outlook looks terrible. The economy's terrible for them. You know, I'm watching the stock up like $11 today, and it does have a 20% short position. And, you know, it's got to be difficult to really, I mean, when you're shorting stocks, is that something that you take into account? Because I would think a lot of people see high short positions. They say that's where the smart money is. They think the stock's going to go down. However, you could really get burned. I like to use Crocs as an example, a company that you did great on shorting. However, I know thousands of people who short that stocks that got murdered before the stock actually came down.
Right.
How do you really go into that when you're looking at a short ratio? Wouldn't you rather see less of a short ratio or more pretty much implies?
No, definitely less of a short ratio. You know, more of a short – well, it depends on the stock. But, you know, the more you have of a short ratio, the problem you have, the greater likelihood you have of a short squeeze. And in this market, when things are generally beaten down to begin with, whether or not they're priced right today or not, you have to say to yourself, you know, if you do get a situation where you have a short squeeze set up, these stocks are going to get really, you know, cremated. And I know a variety of money managers that, you know, take a neutral stance as we do. And by the way, have you? I don't know if you've seen the market neutral hedge funds. The market neutral hedge fund index is getting clobbered. They're not supposed to get clobbered. I'm not suggesting they should always go up either.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is these guys are, you know, market neutral. They got both sides of the equation, and they're getting killed. Because what's happening is we're seeing the worst stocks go up, and that's just not a normal condition. Mm-hmm. And again, you go back to my, you know, how things when you throw an empty hook in the water. But I have to look at all those things. I am not really, you know, we've gone longer and gone longer, and every time we start to step back into a couple of short positions, you know, we hold them, but then all of a sudden they're, you know, let's say off 5 or 6 or 7%, and you know what? We're done. We're out. We're not even taking full positions short either. We're only taking like a half a position because I'm spooked. This market has spooked me, and they've done it on purpose. I don't know who's buying up the junk companies because there's even some companies last week that went up that I think haven't traded in months,
yeah. And
they're just miraculously going up. So I'm not exactly sure what's happening there. Capital One Financial is a company that's run up recently.
American Express.
We don't see any good reason why that company should do well, even considering the change of FASB, even considering the TARP and all that. This is a whole different animal, and the charge-off rates are enormous.
Now, let me ask you this. Is there a condition where, because when I'm doing analysis and I think I see something so clearly, I always ask myself, what's the worst thing? What am I not seeing?
Right.
Now, is one of the things that you would say, or a lot of people would say, is that we're not seeing, is that the markets are still down tremendously off their lows and maybe these companies were just oversold? Or is that just, you think that's factored in already?
Well, some of it may be factored in, and that was the big issue about this quarter's earnings. But, you know, what I really look at and is a couple of things. First of all, you know, we've had some people come out the last few days, a lot of people over the last few days, and said this market is really out of control. Listen, I still wonder about what the head of the New York Stock Exchange said a couple of days ago when he said that this rally wasn't real. It wasn't real money. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he was talking about how, you know, the rally wasn't based on real numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean? Now, that's back to our quant discussion. You know, the quant funds have been blown up, and essentially they were talking, listen, last week they were talking about another Six Sigma event happening that would be a kind of a rotation up and then back down, like we saw about a year ago. The fact is that a lot of people are talking about, you know, who's involved in this? Everybody's looking around going, hey, are you involved? No, I'm not in the market. No, I'm not in the market. Well, who's in the market? Who's doing this? And if you look at trading volume drying up, which is an important issue, and you look at the block trading, program trading, I mean, we're talking about a lot, 35% of the total market right now is program trading, block trading between, mm-hmm. you know, the players. And that's been on the rise. dramatically. That's a big concern. And you extract that from the true volume of the market, and we're just wondering where all this volume is coming from. Some of it, especially if you look at like the TrimTabs numbers, if you see all these people pulling money out of the market, how do you consider the market still going up? Is that possible?
Well, again, it's kind of conflicting because State Street did come out with a, with, you know, and they what is it, trillions and trillions? I want to say something like 50 trillion clears through their institution, and I have these stats. Maybe I'll go over later. But they're saying that the big players are starting to come into this market, and it makes sense as they explain the mutual funds because they can't afford not to be participating in this rally because it's okay. And you know as well as I do, when it comes to money management, it's your benchmark and that's it. And you have to be able to be with your benchmark. However, when your benchmark comes down 25%, 30% like it did last year, and then you have a market where, you know what, the NASDAQ's up this year and you're down 10%, goodbye. You are losing a ton of people. Not only did you already lose people who don't want to be in this market, but the people that do want to be in the market are not going to go with you because you don't know what you're doing. At least that's what they think.
Right. I mean, we take that market neutral stance, and to be honest with you, we avoided all of this catastrophe from February to March. I mean, if you look at kind of the February to March range, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, that was awful, and that was really good, right? I mean, you know, kind of, well, we kind of neutralized all of that. So right now, we're kind of sitting on this point that we're saying, okay, where do we go from here? Mm. And it seems to me, from the McClellan oscillators, from all of our overbought, oversold, you know, stochastics, technically, it looks like this market is terribly, terribly overbought.
Mm-hmm.
Terribly overbought.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you look at the percent of stocks that are above their 20, 50, and 100-day moving average, you don't see these kind of numbers regularly. You just don't. And why is it, you know, what's driving it? What's driving these markets? Not to mention the volatility has been enormous. And I still question, Frank, what is going on between 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock?
Oh, I mean, not even 3. It's not even 2, 3, 4 o'clock. It's 3:30 to 4 o'clock now. I mean,
right.
Really, when was it?
Well, do you have anybody to explain that? Because we're still having a tough time pinpointing why it's continuing.
It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before with the last, I think it was the last 2 days, like the last 20 minutes. And not yesterday, it was the day before. The whole market, the whole move higher, which was the Dow went up about 100 points. It was like 1.2%.
Well, that was squaring off ahead of options expiration.
Probably. Oh, okay.
You know, that's what was going on. It was broad-based. It was index option players building up their basket because they had to, you know, they short the S&P.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they're doing is they're, you know, kind of topping it off with their position. Each time we've approached option expiration, this time's a little bit different, by the way, because there's no fight for a round number at 850 and 800 or 900. It's kind of right in between, so there's no big fight right now. Nobody's going to be trying to get to 900 by the end of the day, I don't think. Nobody's going to be trying to get to 850. Although the Dow now, you have an 8,000 number that's, you know, they may try to kind of move it up and down around that 8,000 number by the end of today. But almost invariably every month we've seen a dramatic change to volume, of course, during options expiration. But following option expiration, it has been a pretty much a very negative market condition moving after that. I'd be surprised if we stay at these levels. And the one thing that I find laughable about all of this is that the big complaints when we find that markets are going down and we have the Fed trying to stop short selling and they have all sorts of manipulation that they try to do to kind of quell the markets. But meanwhile, it's allowed to go up 30% in a matter of a few weeks and everything's fine. And I think, you know, that's just as dangerous for the markets. I want the markets to go up and companies to do well and all this to happen, but not at the risk that the kind of, you know, that we're putting inside of these market conditions. I mean, it's really way too much risk right now with the speed and velocity and really the parabolic move we've seen on these markets. That's not healthy.
It's so funny. And I have my CNBC screen on in my studio here, and I have Bernanke to talk. You know, they're waiting for Bernanke to come on stage and talk about the financial services. I'm like, why are you talking about them? They have record profits. There's nothing wrong anymore. Anyway, real quick, because we got a lot in today, which I love. One stock you like right now, one stock that you would tell people to short.
Well, okay, one stock that we have a continuing problem with is Capital One Financial. I mean, and I'll give you two, MasterCard and Capital One Financial. On the stock side that we, you know, really like, I could probably tell you that, I can tell you regions. We really like still like the Brazil region. But we're really liking many of the ag names. Mosaic, we've been in and out of because we don't feel we could really trust it, but we really like those you know, kind of beginning agricultural names and getting into there. The shippers, we've been in and out of them, EXM, dry ships. You know, it's kind of starting to move up again. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, depending on which way the wind blows with the bankruptcy, the steel companies, we like U.S. Steel, and we're looking at a couple of the other steel companies as potentially, it's to a point they've been beaten down so badly, it could be the next play that China starts buying, you know, post the copper move that's been dramatic.
Absolutely dramatic, absolutely dramatic. Andrew Horowitz, as always, I love having you on the show. Get to pick your mind, and always love the conversation. I know the audience appreciates it, too. So, listen, feel free to come on whenever you want. But
you're the best.
Take care. Okay, guys, let's get to some stats. The VIX was down 5% today. It's at 33. Now, once it broke 39, remember, that was key support there. It really took off, at least over the past couple weeks. Oscillator, which is the S&P oscillator, at 7. Again, high, signaling overbought. Nobody cares. Doesn't matter. So, can't really focus on that number right now. We just keep going higher. Oil pushed through $50 today, up slightly. But today, as my buddy Phil Flynn is quick to point out, the positive and the negatives. Well, some of the negatives, U.S. oil supply near a 20-year high. Demand near a 10-year low. Some of the bullish factors, obviously the Fed policy, OPEC cuts, and reduced global energy investment. I don't know. It seems like every one of the positives are not going to filter into this market for longer than 18 months away. I think they're playing this trade a little too early. I don't know. It's just so much in inventory right now. It's interesting to see, though, how oil's holding that $50 level. It seems like it's going to go up no matter what. Kind of like the stock market, no matter what. I mean, Intuitive Surgical, got a quick look at that conference call. They pulled their guidance. They actually pulled their guidance in a conference call. Now, Intuitive Surgical, it's been hammered lately. Now, the stock came out with earnings yesterday morning. And it's interesting because they had the conference call afterwards. So the company kind of, you know, it was up early after they reported earnings. And during the day, it was kind of flat. And, but today, you know, because they had the conference call last night, they pulled their guidance and the stock was up 12%. Again, another stock that's rising on bad news. Everyone's going to say, well, that's great news if you're rising on bad news. You know, they have no guidance. You don't even know what the hell they're coming out with. How is that good news? And if they had a number and you said, well, it's good news because that is the worst it's going to be, they don't even put a number on it and stocks are going up. So consider that during this rally. We're seeing it a lot. Anyway, moving on here. We have gold down $11 to $867. Amazing, right? Everybody, the numbers kind of hinted at deflation. Gold's an inflationary play. Also, the dollar holding up pretty well. So, and everyone wants to jump into, like, under 10 stocks these days. Again, I took profits on one of my stocks today that is up 180% in 45 days. And you know what happened once I took profits in it, small profits. The stock is up another 9% today. No news at all over the past, like, week. And the stock went from 14 to 18. People are jumping into these under 10 stocks. So I'd like to see, yes, I'm getting, you know, notes from my subscribers saying, Frank, you're the best, you're the greatest. Guys, I'm not the greatest. You know, I picked a good stock, fine. It's a lot of money going into the sector. I happen to be in the right sector at the right time. I do have to pick certain stocks and pick the right stocks. But in all fairness, you know, I had this stock going to 11 to 12. It's 18. Am I letting the winner ride? Of course I'm letting it ride. But, you know, you've got to take profits. Keep the wife happy. Buy a few gifts for the baby. You know how it is, guys, out there. Anyway. But it's interesting to see how much money continues to pour and people are looking to take on more risk. But I think you could see some of these stocks sell off a lot, especially after this earnings season. Now, real quick, why do I think they're going to sell off? Well, here's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing the government with their artificial measures, which you covered a million times, and we're seeing bank earnings get inflated here, which is fine. That's going to be temporary. But what about everybody else? Why are you seeing strong earnings for a lot of these companies? There's a trend going on. You're seeing strong earnings. However, revenue's kind of in line, if you notice. And the reason is, when you first make those cuts, when you immediately make those cuts, you see a dramatic effect, especially a dramatic impact, especially on the bottom line, because it's easy to make cuts at the beginning. I mean, you know, cost-cutting initiatives. You're laying off people. You know, you're cutting the perks. You're selling off non-core assets. And you see the immediate effects of that. But as we go on, it gets more difficult. And we're seeing demand, and, you know, we're going through the leveraging process, and we're seeing demand come down tremendously. A lot of people are going to say, well, look at the cruise lines. They're going through the roof, so consumers are definitely spending. Guys, consumers are not really spending. We saw the retail sales data. They're not. We're seeing the savings, how much they're saving. We're seeing those rates go up, okay? I mean, you could argue back and forth, whatever, half the glass, half full, empty, whatever you want. You guys know out there that, you know, the consumers are really cutting back. They're nervous, and we're seeing unemployment rise through the roof, continuing claims at all-time highs. Anyway, it's a little difficult to see that the consumer is trying to spend this environment. So my point is, the initial cost cuts, you're going to see a major effect this quarter, maybe next quarter. After that, it gets more difficult to cut costs as you go. So I don't know if you're going to see that much of an impact. And again, we're going through an economy that's being compared to the Great Depression, so everyone's nervous as hell. Cutting, I don't want to say overcutting, but really cutting back to the point where you're going to see that reflected in earnings. They've been doing it for the past 6 months now, so you're starting to see it, but you're seeing on the revenues, our revenues are kind of in line. Look at Google. Revenues were kind of in line. Earnings beat by 23 cents. I don't know if you're going to see this going forward. So now we have to wait another quarter to see? I don't know. But there's certainly investors are much more optimistic in this earnings season than they were when it started. And only what, like a week and a half in. We'll see what happens during the rest of the earnings season. And hopefully, you know, we continue to get pretty solid results and also positive comments going forward, like again, from Intel. I don't know how much we believe Intel, but Intel's saying, you know, PC sales have bottomed. BB&T came out, if you saw that conference call, saying, hey, you know what, lower interest rates helping us clear inventory, some of those foreclosures and stuff like that, people going in. They said the market's still there, but we're seeing it. So we're starting to see a couple of positive comments from companies. But again, pay attention to the conference calls. Let's get some news today. MGM will complete the City Center project. You know, I'm so happy they're going to complete that. Not for the stock. I can't wait to see that thing completed. I think it's going to be amazing. And I don't know. There's a lot of news on it, actually. Dubai World reached an agreement pretty much to helping out with the financing. It really doesn't tell you where the stock's going to go. I don't know if it's good or bad that it's going to get completed. I mean, some people believe if you shelve it, you're going to save money. When it's eventually completed, it's going to be the most amazing property you ever see. Not in Vegas, maybe in the world. I mean, if you really see the construction on this product, it's unbelievable. So I really want to see it completed. You might have like 8 people working there by the time it's completed, but anyway, it should be pretty cool to look at. But it was interesting because Icon is saying that they think MGM should restructure through bankruptcy. Now, he has large exposure, which he's going to benefit from the bond market if they do. But however, Kirk Kerkorian, remember, these are two guys who are like 180 years old each. I'm just kidding. Very experienced guys. And it's kind of funny because Kirk Kerkorian owns a major equity stake, so he's like, no, no, no. You know, I don't think they should go bankrupt. So they're kind of like, you know, they're not fighting, but, you know, I don't know. These guys have so much money. And you know, I was looking at Kirk Kerkorian and that investment in MGM. It's worth $1.2 billion. You know what it was worth? $15 billion he lost in that stock. And then you have a guy like Icon coming in at these levels saying, yeah, they should claim bankruptcy. I mean, that's going to be a big fight. I don't know if it's going to be fast punches, but there's going to be maybe a few punches being thrown. It'll be interesting to see how those two heavyweights do. Moving on. Consumer sentiment is at the highest since September, according to the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey. Jumped to 61.9 in April from 57.3 in March. No kidding. Not a surprise. Everybody's doubling their money in weeks. Not to mention that the banks are reporting profits and they're being funded for free by us, the taxpayer. Of course everybody's confident right now. Anyway, I don't know if I use that as a gauge to jump in the markets, but not surprising there. And Citi and GE both reported solid results today. Depends on how you look at them. I saw very, very little transparency for each. And I'm talking about transparency in the financial sector, the financial unit. GE did do good on some of its other divisions, which you're going to find out in a second, because I'm going to bring in someone much smarter than me to break down both of these quarters. That person, Stephanie Link, Director of Research for the Action Alerts Plus Portfolio. Before we're going to get into those two companies, I start by asking her, what'd you think about today's markets?
Well, I'm just breathing a sigh of relief that GE was okay, because I think that there were a lot of people that were nervous about that one. And then, of course, you had the Citigroup as well, that I think people are just taking some solace in those two companies.
It's what'd you think of GE? Because you know, it seems like there's positive and negatives, but everyone out there is really, really focused on the positive. And you have it. It's a company that I want to say that you know, you're happy with the quarter, but also you're kind of anti your position at these levels, right?
Yeah, you know, we've been adding since about $8. You know, the day that they announced the dividend cut is when we started buying again, because we were expecting the dividend cut, we were expecting the credit the credit downgrade, and what we didn't expect is that the dividend cut would we thought that after that announcement, the stock would stabilize. It went from 8 to 5 based on, you know, people expecting the credit downgrade. And that's really, you know, once those two events happened, the stock kind of got its footing, and the company really went to great lengths at increasing their transparency, which has always been the knock on the company. Because, you know, if you look at, you and I have talked about it, if you look at Morgan Stanley, they just open their books, you know, and you know everything about them. And compared to GE, you know, there were a lot of question marks. So I think you've had the company really address many more questions than they have in the past. And then they just posted a number that was, you know, look, you could say that GE Capital lost money. You absolutely could say that. But they had a tax benefit, and as a result, they earned a $1 billion profit. But you know what? The company is guiding for profitability for the year for that division, which, again, is very impressive in this environment. And most importantly, it's the infrastructure side of the business that's really carrying the company. And that business was very strong in energy and technology infrastructure, and they're guiding for flat to up 5% in that business, and very few are guiding up in this. So it just speaks to the high quality, the backlog, the orders that they're getting, the market share that they're getting in the downturn in this division. So, yeah, that's why we're buying it. We just think that the bad news is that the worst is behind the company, and you know, I've said all along, I think the industrial piece is worth 12, 13, but if you have a recovery, that's in a trough, you know, the trough market. If you have a recovery, I think that business is worth a lot more. So that's why we're buying it here.
Now, and one of the positives is definitely the infrastructure. I noticed. Remember, GDP growth is collapsing, and they're able to, you know, show positive results in infrastructure, which is definitely a bonus.
Yeah. So they have $19 billion in orders. You know, so that's a big number. You know, and that's very, very impressive.
And everyone out there, I always say, listen to conference calls. GE is the king of conference calls, whether you like stock or not, whether you own it or not, is because you'll see a number of divisions where you could break down each single division that they operate in, whatever it is, to wins, to suppliers of wins, to, you know, all the way down, and probably come up with about 300 different companies just off of the GE call. I'm dead serious. Where you could have numerous ideas and say, well, you know what, GE's seen growth in this, so here you go. And it's almost like, you know, you could really go down, break it down, you know, step by step. And a lot of times I used to do that when I spoke at conferences, and everyone said, what were all those companies you just mentioned again? And I had like 30 companies off of one conference call. And that, you know, the infrastructure companies in particular, because you also see what regions are doing good. Now, with that said, you said one other thing about GE. You said, you know, they're coming out much more information. But what about, it seems like they have a little transparency issues from what I saw, where, you know, the asset quality, the commercial real estate. This is what people are worried about. I didn't get really an indication of where they stand on that. And it seems like that's still worrying some of the analysts that are covering stock. What did you see? Does that worry you? Because I know a lot of divisions are worth a lot more, but it seems like, I don't know if it, you know, they don't have to mark to market. And it seems like that's the component that's keeping the stock at 12, and people thinking go lower for that. What was your opinion on that part of the business? I want to see more transparency. I felt like I didn't get it, though.
Well, you know, I think that the commercial real estate has been the question for a while on this stock. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, I think the company, first and foremost, the company reserved very well in the quarter, you know, over $1 billion. The company also, you know, they're not going to open up their every single part of their book, because they're trying to make money on this book too, right? So there's a lot. There's only so much. I mean, there's more that they could do, but I think that what they've done is they have addressed a lot of the concerns, and we're not out of the woods. I mean, we're certainly not. But my point is that at $12, you know, this company, you know, not too long ago, people thought this company was going out of business. People thought that they could potentially go bankrupt, or they could potentially have, you know, this could be a dire situation. So I think they've done a lot in terms of what, you know, to shore up their balance sheet. And, you know, you look at their leverage ratios, you look at, I mean, they're 6-to-1 in leverage. They have a 6.6% TCE, tangible common equity. That's very respectable. They've got $48 billion in excess capital. They've got enough to weather this storm. And I think what we're going for, I'm not saying that this company is all of a sudden going to go back to growth mode, and I'm not saying that this company is not without risk in the commercial side of the business, sure, but they've got a lot of other things that are that they are doing, that they are benefiting from, and they've taken dramatic cost-cutting out of the company, so they've got some wiggle room to get around these issues, and that, you know, dire straits is kind of off the table. That's my point. And I think dire straits off the table, you know, and the industrial piece rallying and doing better than expected could make this a high-teen stock. You know, is it going back to 50? No way. But, you know, I think it shouldn't be where it is.
Okay, fair enough. And as we're speaking, I'm watching CNBC, and our buddy Dan Fitzpatrick's on that the midday Fast Money segment.
He's great.
He's funny, right? He's on there.
He's smart, sharp. He's just terrific. Tells it like it is.
Yeah, he does. He does. It's pretty cool because he was talking about Baidu just now. It's funny because we were talking about Baidu early today. And you know, I was going to say, oh, it's horrible. It's definitely horrible. I should have told him that because he's like, cause I knew he was going to talk about it. I knew he liked it. But we do the same thing, too. Whenever even when I come out with alerts with stocks and everything, I like to talk to you about it. I like to talk to Dan about it, especially technicals. And you know, just to let the audience know what we do is, you know, I want to know everything about it. I want to know, you know, the positives and negatives, and I'll ask you, you know, what you think about certain stocks. What you think about the economy? What you think about the dry bulk sector? You know, because this is a stock that I recommended in it, but it's, you know, just to share with the audience of how we pretty much do things sometimes, you know?
I think communication is extremely important, and that's how you learn. You know, you and I talk, and, you know, you'll shed light on something that mm-hmm. and bring a new point to something that I maybe not have thought about, and vice versa. And you know, we may agree to disagree, which we do a lot, but you know what? That's what makes a market, too, mm-hmm. right? Not everybody's going to agree, and I think that's how you really learn, and doing this for as long as we have been doing this for, you know, that's an important part of the due diligence on a stock or on an industry is just by finding out what the information is.
Yeah, especially in this market. Sometimes the government comes up with things. I'm like, what do you think? You're like, I don't know. I'm like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know either. And I come in here and say, hey, you know what? The market's up today, and I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
But let's go on to another important, and this is the news today. The news is GE and the news is Citigroup. What did you see in Citigroup? I know you've been very busy with GE all day today, really going through a conference call, so I wanted to talk to you. I don't know if you got a chance to look at some of the stats that Citi posted today. Mm-hmm. Stocks seem to went up early, now it came down. It just seems like it's being a little bit manipulated with the convertible prefers.
I think that's exactly what's going on. And I think, again, they too, you know, wasn't too long ago where the company was, considered being nationalized. And some people would say it is nationalized because they've gotten so much money from the government. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah. I mean, I think the stock action, it's hard for me, and I know, you know, you're the guy that runs stocks under 10, and, you know, you're not buying it here. It would be hard for me to put money into this company right now, despite all the efforts that they are doing. Mm-hmm. For one example, they had a slight decline in their Tier 1 ratio, right, mm-hmm. To 11.8. You know, but I have Goldman and I have Morgan and I have J.P. Morgan that have their tier ratios are far in excess of what Citigroup is posting. Mm-hmm. And so despite the improvements that Citi is doing, there are just better run companies, in my opinion, that just don't have these legacy issues as much. So I would rather gravitate towards them.
Now, what would you say to the average person looking at TV today or looking in the media and looking at some of these financials report blowout earnings? BB&T, another company, reported blowout earnings.
Yeah.
We have more financials on the way next week, and I'm going to be honest with you, we're going to see blowout earnings. The conditions are very good. What would you say to people? Because a lot of people are looking and saying, one, why the hell do we have to continue to get to – why aren't these guys paying back the TARP since they're making record profits?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is, are they out of the woods? Because right now, a lot of people sitting on the sidelines, based on what I see, I think, no, they're not. However, I could be wrong. It seems like a lot of other people are on the sidelines. You know, they're just like the common folks are saying, you know what, can I really start buying these financials at these levels again? Well, how would you answer that question?
Okay, well, first, I think there are some firms that definitely want to pay back TARP, but they're not allowed to just yet. So, you know, companies like Goldman Sachs, companies like J.P. Morgan, a few of the regionals also, by the way, are interested in paying back TARP. This industry is benefiting mostly from the yield curve. That is why they can print money, and that's why a traditional bank has been, you know, a company that hasn't been involved in all the toxic assets, and they don't have all these, you know, various different divisions, you know, derivatives, et cetera. A plain vanilla regional bank will make a lot of money on spread investing, on positive spread investing, you know, when you are You know, borrowing short, lending long. That's their game, and that's why I was so bullish on J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo, because the deposits are so much, and they make so much money on that alone. So before anybody even turns the lights on in the office, if the yield curve is steep, they can make money all day long. And that's why you're seeing some of these companies make some pretty good numbers. Now, in terms of, you know, so in terms of, you know, the TARP situation, it's just, that's going to be a matter of time. The stress test comes out May 4th. At least some of the reports come out May 4th. And we'll get more clarity on that in that regard. We took money off of some of the names that we aren't, you know, we took money off of Wells Fargo because it had such a massive move. And I like Goldman better. I like J.P. Morgan better. I think you have to be very, very careful by getting in and jumping in right here. We started a position in State Street this week because it hasn't rallied nearly as much as the industry, and they will benefit as the market goes higher because they are tied so directly to the asset levels, and that has a big a big market component. So I think there are names you can pick and choose, but you have to be very, very careful. And the new name that we picked, we only put on a very, very small position because we expect, you know, there's going to be rocky. So we're going to take advantage of the volatility and buy on the weakness. But I'd be very careful on the group.
Okay. Now, we're talking to Stephanie Lang. She's Director of Research for the Action Alerts Plus portfolio. You have four new recommendations this week in a week.
And I just told you one.
more than 30 positions in a portfolio. You guys see a lot of buys. Also, the portfolio is doing great, making money. And we have a special offer for the newsletter, which is through www.realstorypodcast.com. It's for $279. Tell me a little bit more about the newsletter. The reason is we're getting great feedback from this. And also, I noticed that you're getting a lot of questions from people that have suddenly subscribed. Tell me, what are people's most concerns, especially when they first subscribe? What are some of the questions that they're asking you?
I think the biggest concern, and by the way, I love emails. I love all the information, good, bad, indifferent, everything. The more information, the better. If I can help answer any questions along the way, that's what I'm here for.
And what's your email address? And these are, and again, if you subscribe to the newsletter, she will answer you. If you're not going to subscribe, sorry, that's just the way it goes. So email address?
It's stephanie.link@thestreet.com.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
That's right. I would say the biggest question I get is that we have so many names. How do people follow along? And most of the questions are really market related. Like, you know, I'm just starting to get involved in the market. I have this amount of money. What should I do? Kind of thing. So what we try and do is not only do we try. Okay, clearly our number one priority is to make money, right, in the fund. But number two, it's really to provide education. We are doing our best to try and keep up with the markets and stay ahead of the markets, if you will, because we are beating the market. We're trying our best to just take the information that we learn, condense it, simplify it, put it down in an email, and so that people feel comfortable making a monetary decision on that particular stock. We have a lot of stocks in the portfolio because there's so much to choose from, honestly. And I'm pretty honest. When we rank the stocks each week, I mean, I'm as honest, as brutally honest as I can possibly be. And if I've messed up and you know, we're down in a position, we'll certainly admit it. But if we're right on a position and it's going our way and we feel good, I'll certainly alert, you know, subscribers. Let's say they're in the know of what's going on. But clearly what we're trying to do is educate. We're trying to give perspective. We're trying to give guidance along the way. The volatility has been something fierce, and we're just trying to make money off that volatility. And you know, we've traded a little bit more in the past year than how we normally trade, but I would say that the volatility and the quick moves that we've had in these stocks has really been the reason. Because, you know, when you make 15% in the stock, I was just talking to Jim about Yum Brands, and it's up 15% where we bought it, and, you know, that's a big move, and we only bought it a few weeks ago. So it's, you know, these are really big moves in such a short period of time that it's very prudent to take money off the table, and that gives us a lot of cash to buy other things.
How often do you talk directly to Jim Cramer during a day?
100.
So, guys, it's an indirect way to get access, direct access to Jim Cramer, and it is true because sometimes she's, you know, with the BlackBerry always checking. It's so funny.
Yeah, we're both up at 3:30 in the morning working out, and it starts then. And last night, I think I finally signed off at 9 o'clock. I said I gotta go to bed. I'm just a little tired after a full day of earnings and a couple of new companies. So, Yeah, it's you know, we are really a partnership. It really is. It's a lot of fun, and a lot of times we agree, but a lot of times we don't agree. But that's healthy because you want the other side. Much like what we just talked about, you and I, mm-hmm. when we talk about something, it's wonderfully healthy to get both sides and perspective, and that's what makes it fun.
And absolutely, and just know the newsletter usually sells for $400. It's unless you listen to this podcast, you're not going to get it for the price we're offering, just $279. I'm glad you went through the details because I'm getting questions too. You know, what is the newsletter about? And you know, it's easier to say than sometimes writing an email.
Sure.
So I wanted to go. But if you're interested, www.realstorypodcast.com. That's www.realstorypodcast.com. And again, it's an alert based newsletter where you're going to get alerts throughout the day. Where you go, it's not. I've been in the newsletter business for longer than 15 years, and sometimes it's, you know, I've been a part of a newsletter where it's 2 weeks and it used to be a print version. So you used to get information a week later or a week old. Today, you're getting information like almost 10, 15 minutes after it happens. Boom, this just happened. This is what we're doing with the stock. So for a service like that, which would have paid for itself 25 times over, probably if you subscribe within the last month or so, it's definitely worth it for a lot of them. So I really appreciate you coming on and explaining everything about it.
Oh, no, I mean, it's my pleasure. It's a tough time. You know, even though the market's headed back in the right direction, it's still a really tough time. It's very hard to keep up with the market, and it's really hard to keep up with all the information. So, you know, at like your newsletter, like my newsletter, we're trying just to provide as much help mm-hmm. as we possibly can and hopefully make some bucks along the way.
And it does help for people who you know, have jobs out there who want to be a part of the market too, because some people, you know, if you're in there and you're just watching the market all day, you know everything that's going on, the news, you want to trade off of it, then maybe you don't need a newsletter. But, you know, but sometimes people really do need that help, and they want to know the perspective, especially directly from Jim Cramer, and you get that through you, which is pretty cool. So, and
yeah.
Your advice as well, so... I know they appreciate that. But anyway, thank you very much for all the information on GE. You covered it great. I just heard the IM go. I know that's Jim Cramer, so you probably have to go. So listen, thank you very much for being on Friday again. I appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
All right, take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye. All right, guys, next week's Real Story Today on the economic front. Pretty busy. Leading indicators. Going to see your normal initial claims, crude inventories. Also, existing home sales, new home sales. So we'll get a better gauge on, you know, housing. I do think both of those are going to come in better than expected, and you're going to see the XHB run up past 14. That's my opinion. If they don't come in positive, or existing home sales, or new home sales, if they're not positive with interest rates where they are, the tax incentives, the $8,000 tax credit, and the home prices coming down, we're in for a lot of trouble. I could tell you that this, I'm thinking that, you know, maybe we bottom next year. It could be even longer. And you say, well, Frank, you're going to look at two reports. I'm looking at just these two monthly reports because it should be significant. You should see the mortgage applications were rising, not last week, but earlier. You're seeing a lot of people, that last group of people flooding to the market to get the low interest rates, the low mortgage rates. And if they're not buying at these levels, when the hell are they going to buy? So these two reports, I think, are significant, and they better be positive. That's why I was surprised when housing data earlier, and I'm talking about the sentiment going to 14. I'm talking about some of the other things that they reported earlier, like permits and stuff, and you know, they didn't come out too good, which was surprising, you know, given this environment. Right now should be the best environment ever to buy a home. And if it's not, it's telling you that home prices are not the level where people are willing to pay. And again, they may come down, but the rules are different, all right? The last 8 years, you did not have to put down 20%. Today, it's just about mandatory. So it's interesting to see that people may not want to put that down because they're afraid their asset's going to depreciate or they may lose their job. So very, very important on the economic front next week. And of course, then we have earnings. Listen to this list. Bank of America, Weatherford, Eli Lilly, IBM, Caterpillar, Deere, United Technologies, Apple, Freeport, Yum!, Morgan Stanley, Boeing, 3M, Pepsi, Amazon, American Express, National Oil Well, Varco, L3 Communications, Potash, Qualcomm, Coca-Cola, United Healthcare, Yahoo, Halliburton, and probably about 200 others. Those are just some of the big names I pulled. So, how do you play it? Pick a few that are in your industry. Of course, you're going to listen to your own conference calls. Pick a few that are in your industry. Try to listen to infrastructure calls, like I mentioned with Stephanie Link just a few minutes ago, and go from there. See if you could find ideas. See which companies are sold off more than others. I did an interesting interview on Talbots. So if you guys get a chance, check it out. I don't like it. However, I showed, you know, just different research techniques and what I'm looking at for retailers through earnings season. Also provide a couple of free sites. That's on thestreet.com. It's absolutely for free if you guys want to check it out. Maybe you don't want to see my face. However, you could shut it off and listen to it because there's no reason to watch me. Anyway, if you have any questions or comments about today's show, I can reach frank.curzio at thestreet.com. That's frank.curzio at thestreet.com. That's it for me. Have a great weekend. Spend time with your family. If you made money this month, you know what? Spend it on your kids. I'll see you next week, guys. Take care. Bye.
The views expressed on The Real Story by Frank Curzio and his guests are theirs alone and do not represent those of TheStreet.com Incorporated. In keeping with TheStreet.com's editorial policy, Curzio is not allowed to own or short individual stocks or invest in hedge funds, though he can invest in mutual funds and ETFs. Email Frank at frank.curzio at thestreet.com. That's frank.curzio, C-U-R-Z-I-O, at thestreet.com.
At Continental Airlines, we're proud to fly the newest jet fleet among global airlines based in the U.S. State-of-the-art, fuel-efficient planes that beg the question, don't you love that new plane smell? For reservations, go to continental.com. Continental Airlines. Work hard, fly right.
AT&T works in more places, whether you're texting directions to a friend, checking email on the go, or calling home from abroad. AT&T is delivering wireless for the way you live, on the go. AT&T is America's wireless leader, with more customers than any other carrier. So live wireless and stay connected to your family, your friends, your world, with wireless from the new AT&T. Your world, delivered.